from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 378, recorded live Tuesday, June 30th, 2013. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, makers of Gesture Pack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, the 12th installment of Hansel Minutia, Scott has a post-build discussion with Richard Campbell.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. In fact, it is an episode of Hansel Minutia with Richard Campbell. How are you?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
I am, frankly, I'm pretty tired.
Well, you got little boys, man. It takes a lot of energy.
It does take a lot of energy, but also what takes a lot of energy is little boys plus a week at Build plus two conferences before Build. I basically spent the last 2 weeks not on the road. Like some people say they're on the road for 2 weeks, but I was basically right. Like 4 days and a day back and 2 days and a day back. And there was one day where I got one day I was sitting at an after conference party at midnight feeling sad. And I had a flight the next day at 8 p.m. And so I had the entire Sunday in New York to look at.
Yep.
And I was like, well, you know, I could, and this is the thing. This is why I'm such a mess. I could do all these things in New York and see all these people. And I just, you know what I did? Right there, as I'm sitting there, I changed my flight to 4 a.m. and went directly to the hotel, got my bag, got in a cab, and went to the airport. Got the 4 a.m. flight and was home for lunch.
Yeah. Now, you made the right call, my friend. Go home. And I'm a big believer in the 24-hour flip. It's better than not going home.
You think so?
I mean, my kids found it vaguely amusing. The only one who was distressed by it really was my dog. He'd get very angry that I would get home, unpack, do laundry, repack, leave the next day. But it was better than not going home.
Yeah. I mean, I just, like, there's a bunch of people I would have loved to have seen in New York and a bunch of stuff I would like to, but I don't live in New York. And me wandering around New York thinking about the New York that could have been is not as interesting as hanging out with my kids.
Yeah. Well, and especially now, they're just so much fun. It's such a ton of energy.
Yeah, they're totally in wacky Lego mode right now. So
that's awesome.
I want to exploit that as much as possible. So now here we are.
I love that we bookended ourselves at a Build. I saw you at the airport on the way in and on the way out.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing. I checked in on Foursquare on the way into Build in San Francisco. And there you are, and I'm like, oh, let's share a cab. And you're like, no, I'm gone. I'm on the train.
Yep.
So I go to the train, and then you're on the train, and there you are.
I'm on the train. So we rode the train together.
We did not hang out at all for a week.
Nope, didn't see. I think we saw each other briefly once or twice. Mm-hmm. But literally, like in passing, you had a mob around you, or I'm engaged with someone, something like that. And then we get to the lounge at the end of Build, flying home, and there you are in the lounge.
It's bizarre. Yeah, so then we said we need to do a show.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just so funny how those things work out. And, you know, the more and more, I don't know if it's the kids as well, but I don't do the whole go to a conference and then hang out as much anymore. I want to pack it full of stuff so it's useful to people.
Yeah.
Because if I go and do one talk and then sit around for 4 days, somehow that just makes me uncomfortable.
No, you'll go home. I like working. If I'm at an event, I want to work.
Yeah, yeah. But man, we did some great stuff. I was on Channel 9 live. I hosted like 3 or 4 hours of live TV, and I did a talk, and I did the keynote demo, which went pretty well. And there was not a lot of downtime, I'm afraid.
Nope. I was doing nonstop interviews, talking to the developers that were attending Build, just finding out, collecting their stories, what they were interested in, and so forth. And one of the questions I asked them fairly often was, who at Build would you like to hang out with? And your name came up more often than not. Oh. Yours and Steve Ballmer's were the top names of the list.
Well, clearly that means Ballmer and I need to hang out more.
Clearly.
I've shaken his hand twice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. It's one of those things.
I thought it was, you know, a really good conference. And, you know, I know that as a Microsoft employee, I'm not supposed to think that about any conferences that are our conferences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm only supposed to compliment other conferences.
Right.
But, you know, just to be really frank, our conferences have a tendency to be a little bit bland. And by bland, I mean like your tech eds and your kind of like your big sprawling conferences. You know what I mean? I've done a million tech eds.
Yep.
And they're just kind of like, you know, hey, we're dickhead. But this one, I don't know who, I got a call and found out whoever was in charge, but it was so personal.
Yeah. I think it was a little bit smaller. You know, the biggest problem I have with TechEd is at 11,000, 12,000 people, it is just sprawling.
Yeah.
And this was a few thousand. It was enough that there was a real energy, but not so much that you just couldn't even find anybody.
Right. You know, with TechEd, you have that sense of like, well, this talk is in Hall A and this other talk is in Hall C, a short train ride away.
Yes. I'm changing time zones because I want to go to a different talk.
And with Build, there, you know, you kept seeing people over and over again, and they had the big room. And what was so great about the big room, and what I just really can't get over being so cool, was that, you know, Nokia, which is a huge company, had a plywood box that was their booth.
Yep.
And they were next to Secret Labs, the Agent Watch smartwatch guy, who had a plywood box.
Yes.
And on the top of the box, they had a big giant piece of butcher paper attached to a roll. So the person giving the demo could scribble on the top of the box and then rip it off and then clear their table. And it was just, it was so cool. It was just geeks and pencils and gadgets and demos. You know what I mean? Like everyone had the same booth. And I just loved
it. I was at the other end of the, one of the things I noticed about the big hall, it was busy all the time. And there were lots of areas. You know, the thing about Build is that it was quite focused on developers building apps. And so a lot of this, where I was at, around the studio group and the Azure group, they were in conversations with developers all day. Folks came there with stuff they needed to figure out, and they got help.
Yeah, we went out of our way to make sure that everybody was at the booth at some point, that all the speakers did their booth time.
Yeah.
Which, you know, sometimes you'll send, the speakers will go, but then we'll have like someone who's a non-speaker go. We tried to mix it up. We wanted to give everyone a chance to work the booth.
Yeah.
And these booths were great because there was no front. Like, you know how a booth is usually like, you know, a curtain and a bunch of plastic piping. And then there's some sad people who sit at the booth. And, you know, the only difference between a successful booth and a non-successful booth is whether or not people show up. But with here, it was just a box, you know, like a table. Like it was almost like a workbench, wasn't it? It was like your dad's workbench.
Everybody had seats.
Yeah.
Or they all stood and there was a sign. This is what the topic is here.
Right.
And sometimes people modify their signs. Oh, and we're also talking about this. But that was about it.
Yeah. And then people just hung out. And you couldn't even really tell who was the person, like who was in charge there. I loved it. I think that, like, you know, there's some conferences like CodeMash, you know, out there in Ohio that have the hallway track down solid, as we call it, the hallway track. They've got fun games and they have a keynote. And then there's some conferences in Australia that have a keynote that opens the conference and then a lock note that closes the conference.
Nice.
I love that. And then there's this idea of these tables and this kind of the great equalizer. I think at the next Angle Brackets conference, the one that we're doing, me and John Papa and you and Shirley Brothers and folks, we did one, of course, in March. We're going to do another one in October. I think we got to talk about that because it just changed the feeling of the entire conference. And I was so stoked about it. And then the open space, as you come down the stairs, it was just all lounge chairs and the power adapters. This was so great. You know how you're always hunting for power at a conference?
Yeah.
They had a piece of plywood with a classy sign, and each piece of plywood had four, count them, six outlet adapters. So you had like 24 power adapters just sitting in the middle of nowhere. It was fantastic. Yep.
And every time there was a cluster of power, there was a cluster of people around it.
Talking.
And they ended up talking every time.
That was I was really impressed because I have a tendency to be a little jaded with these big conferences. And
we've been to a lot of shows.
We've been to a lot. We really have. And I hate to be jaded, but I think people who listen can understand that after a while it gets a little tedious. But this, I was totally geeked. And then, Richard, the hotel that I chose, you know what was next door to the hotel?
What?
Chipotle. The best
That's part, all you need.
No, I'm telling and you, dude. The best part about going to a conference on a work expense account, Chipotle, man. Morning, noon, and night. My wife won't let me go more than once a week. because she's like, oh, Chipotle again. So maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks, I had Chipotle at least twice a day for an entire week. It was so awesome.
Just a burrito bowl, I presume.
My the guy who's coming to... This is actually... We should keep rolling here because the guy who's mowing my lawn is now here. Okay?
Of course.
So I'm going to step over to... And I'm going to grab my portable vocal booth. And we'll see if we notice a difference in the quality. So you...
Because I can hear the rumble from
you
here.
You talk while I get the booth.
All right. Well, my whole experience working on the build was collecting all these interviews. And I did literally hundreds of them talking to regular developers about the kind of software they were building and the things they were really interested in. It was a lot of fun, ton of work for me. We worked really hard, but I can't tell you how many conversations I had. It was really staggering.
All right. So and now
it got me all excited about development again.
I'm glad. Now I'm in the portable vocal booth. This is from Real Traps. We'll see if it lays down differently. Now I'm talking to you on the phone.
Yep.
But of course I've got the booth here in front of me. So we'll see if that covers the lawnmower guy.
See how that works out.
Yeah. Which is also funny because I can't see the screen anymore, which means I have no notes.
Nah, you'll have to wing it from here.
Yeah. Speaking of notes, the little notebook, note taker deal. What did they give us? Not give us. I didn't get anything. They gave
you
everybody
didn't get anything. I didn't get anything. We were both staff.
So people
right?
who went to build got a Surface Pro and they got an 8-inch Acer. Was it?
Yeah, it was a little Acer. And I got to look at one. You know, I always worry about Acer tablets. I've never been terribly impressed with one. I have one of their W510s, but it just seems like it was a little early.
They tend to be a little plasticky.
Yeah, but the one that they gave out at Build was the W3, which is the 8-inch screen that comes with Win 8.
Right.
And it's sort of in the Kindle HD form factor style.
You know, an 8-inch, it's such a tough thing. Like, I went and looked after I saw the Acer, I went to AT&T and looked at the iPad Mini. Mm-hmm. And I showed it to my wife. And I was just thinking, this is perfect. She'll love this. She'll love a tiny little tablet. She's like, no. She says, the screen's too small. And I said, well, what's the problem? And she says, well, there's less information. So then I said, well, what do you mean? I showed her the inbox on an iPad and an iPad mini.
Right.
And I said, no, it's the same number of dots. You know, it's not really because the iPad's a retina, but the point is that it is effectively the same amount of information, right?
The same amount of information was on the screen.
She didn't believe it.
Doesn't it perceived as different?
Yep. She perceived that I won't be able to see as much. So
interesting.
I said, but it'll fit in your purse. And she's like, no, that's fine. So I don't know who wants an 8-inch tablet? People with giant
The Jobs always said we're not going to make this, but the Mini is the best selling iPad now.
You know, for kids, it's really beautiful. I mean, it's a great size for children or for someone who has a purse or a giant inner pocket. But for actual work getting done, I don't know. But you know, my mom has a Kindle Fire, and she is obsessed with this thing. Like for her, an 8-inch tablet is this perfect size.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I do love my Kindle and that's the one thing that always goes with me. Even if I'm going to, I'll flex on whether I want a tablet or my Ultrabook, you know, that'll change. But the Kindle's always there, always, always.
Now, is it the Kindle HD or is it a Kindle black and white?
It's a Paperwhite.
Yeah, see, I've got the Paperwhite Touch with the cover.
Yeah.
Cover makes all the difference. Like, I hated my Kindle. I had the Kindle 3G, right? The last one with the keyboard. And it was a great device. It was almost perfect. Then I got the Kindle Paperwhite. Screen's great, but the size of the bezel is too small.
Right.
And
There's
nowhere to put your thumb.
Yeah.
So I wrote this scathing review on my blog. And then I got the cover that snaps around it and adds another eighth of an inch around the bezel. And it also turns on and turns off when you close it.
Yeah.
With a little magnet. Ah, it's a whole different device. It's
changed it.
It's perfect. It is a glorious, highly recommended checkout. Go to my blog and search for Kindle Paperwhite. I've got an extensive review as well as an update where I do an about face and I say, it is a great device if you have the cover.
If you have the cover.
Yeah,
it's important.
I take that everywhere. And I cannot read a Kindle book on an LCD screen. Like I just can't do it. I've got it on my Windows RT, but I don't even bother.
Once you've had Paperwhite, you're ruined. We just know how pleasant digital reading can be.
Well, yeah, and once you've had Retina, like I could maybe suffer through it on Retina, but this is the thing. This is the next year or two is Retina because, you know, I like my X1 Carbon Touch laptop, but I can see the dots. It's so funny. Retina turns you off of like all other screens.
Well, and you should bring that up because I'm currently shopping for an ultra high resolution monitor for at least one of my machines. My secondary workstation has one of the original 24-inch 1920 by 1200 screens. So it's got to be 8 years old now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a 30-inch monitor, and I think it's 96 dpi.
Yeah, that's the 2560 by 1600 right. Dual DVI type, right?
Exactly right. And it's run by I actually have three monitors, and I've got an NVIDIA 740, I think, GTX or something. You know, it's a pretty expensive NVIDIA, at least it was at the time.
Yeah.
But it's pushing it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I have a 2560 by 1600 30-inch on my dev machine with 20-inch wings on it in portrait mode so that you get 4960 by 1600. Mm-hmm. So I think the 1600 high is really important when you're coding. It's those few more lines of code that help.
Yeah, yeah. So you're saying that I will be able to buy a 30-inch 200 DPI monitor?
Yeah, so Asus just announced their the PQ321, and that's a 4K UHD monitor. So that's 3840 by 2160 in a 30-inch display. So four times the resolution of a 1920 by 1080.
So then the question is, do you simply scale it double, and then you get a smooth display with the same amount of general relative visual space? Or do you go and do what people did back in the day and run 1024 on a 13-inch monitor, right, just because you want more dots?
Right.
You know, do I run it small fonts and have like a non-visible start menu?
Well, and I saw a guy on one of the Retina Display Mac Pros running in native resolution with Studio, and it turns out none of your lines of code are long enough anymore. He could actually open up three code windows side by side and still see the full length of any of the lines of code. But it is, you know, we're all 40-ish now. I couldn't see it. Like, it's just too high res. I'm sad about that because I used to love my 15-inch 1920 by 1200 that most people couldn't see. But now even I'm like, oh, man, that's tough to see.
Yeah, you know, somebody was showing me the Surface Pro, which is, what, a 13-inch screen?
Yep.
And it's 1080p. And I'm like, holy crap, that's really small. They're like, I love my Surface Pro. Like, I can't understand how you could do any coding, like, without an external monitor and a Surface Pro. And I don't yet have old guy eyes. Yet.
It's coming.
Yet. I know it's coming. But I just know that there's an amount of mental effort that is required to get engrossed in code that is only 11 inches wide. And, you know, people who have MacBook Airs and 11-inch or 13-inch MacBook Airs are the same way. But, you know, if... The thing is, I was talking to Pete Brown about this. We love our Lenovo W520s, right? It is a
sure.
giant, glorious, rock-solid workstation replacement.
Yeah, with a tank machine.
Oh, it's a tank. It's glorious. But what I want is I want it to fold up into the size of an X1 Carbon Touch.
Yes.
You know, every time I use it, I'm like, oh, this is so nice and so fast. And why do I not use this again? Oh, yeah. It's 10 pounds.
Yes, you put it in your backpack, and then you look at the welts on your shoulder afterwards.
Yeah, oh yeah, exactly. Or my bones are growing the wrong way because I've been carrying this thing around for so many years.
Yeah, we call that Lenovo shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. It's awful. Of course, I fill up the Lenovo. I fill up my bag with other crap, though. I was joking about this, but it's true. The Lenovo X1 Carbon Touch is 3 pounds, which is nice because it frees you up for 3 pounds worth of dongles that you have to carry around with you.
That you need right. because you don't have every kind of plug like exactly. like the Lenovosaurus has,
right.
where every single plug in you want is on the back of that machine.
And then you see people carrying their 3 pound Surface and their 3 pound and their 2 pound iPad or whatever,
yep.
just because they can't just, you know, no one wants to go on a trip and, oh, I don't have my tablet. You know, I don't know. Somehow Netflix is less compelling when there's a keyboard between you and the screen.
Yeah. It's interesting how that is.
First world.
Well, and I'm looking at upgrading my Ultrabook and thinking about looking at the new Asus Transformer, which is that same super slim aluminum chassis, but the screen literally pulls off the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's in the screen.
Damian Edwards was showing me the Kira book, the Toshiba Kira book, and we looked at that. It was on the floor at Build, and it's a Retina display Ultrabook. But he said that a Samsung I want to say Activa or something like that, but I know that's a yogurt.
The new one, the Avia.
Something like that.
From Samsung.
But it's the brand new Haswell processors, 10, 12 hours of battery life, and a Retina display. that might be what I need.
And I fear for ARM in the Windows stack.
Well, yeah, it does bring up the question, like, what is the point?
Well, 2 years ago, I think it made a lot of sense to sort of make that shot at Intel. We will go ARM if you don't get your power consumption down.
And they did.
But,
you know, and they did.
They've done it.
But the question is then, does this just lower ARM prices? Like, does ARM need to not be in the market? Because Haswell's going to be, you know, that's pretty high end, right?
Yep.
But maybe we're talking about $199 tablets, right? And this is the real question. You know, everyone says Android rules the day, but, you know, if you go to Fry's Electronics or any of these kind of mid-level discount electronics type places, these $199 tablets, and even in some cases $99 tablets, they're crap. I mean, there's no other way to put it. The only tablet that's any good for $199 is the Kindle. You know, and that's clearly subsidized.
But it's also still a specific purpose machine. You're not loading anything you want on that machine. And I think that's the biggest thing.
People break their Kindles, and the Kindle has a lovely app store. So, you know, my mom's got Words with Friends and stuff. So maybe it's not running Word and Excel, but it is a fully competent machine, I would say. The Kindle HD.
I just don't see the programming suites for it. Like, don't see people writing as much software.
Well, but it's Android though, right? Don't any Android apps run on a Kindle?
Theoretically, but actually no. Right? They've branched away.
Well, that's right? Android is kind of fragmented, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's not only that, but I mean, that's the ultimate fragmentation. They've left. They're not coming back. They're doing their own thing. Yeah.
Well, speaking of fragmentation, it seems like we can finally see the opposite of that fragmentation coming, which is, and this is just speculation, but it looks to me like maybe a year from now, I could have a tablet, a desktop, a laptop, a phone, and an Xbox, all with this live tile kind of Windows 8.1 vibe, theoretically syncing all my apps between machines, right?
Yep.
And, you know, all my files are everywhere. You know, it's a kind of a, of course, the marketing guys will paint it as a utopian future, but it's certainly they've tidied everything up. I mean, Windows Phone 8 is the Windows 8 kernel, right?
Yeah.
There's speculation about Xbox being Windows 8 somewhere in there as well. I would think that would make things simpler for them. And presumably that means I can develop on even more devices with the languages I know how to do.
Yeah, and with a UI paradigm you understand, you know, we get back to this whole idea of back in the old days when Microsoft came up with those distinctive UI guidelines for file and help and so forth, the MDI interface. It was so that anybody using a desktop knew where to find stuff on any app.
Right, right.
And now we're seeing that same sort of rule set coming by creating this fluid metaphor that comes everywhere.
So the question is then, is this a good idea, right? Is this UI good enough where we're just going through growing pains and mom and dad and my kids and everybody will be able to go, oh yeah, you know, tiles and small tiles, big tiles, live tiles.
Yeah.
Or are they going to reject it, you know, fully?
Well, yeah. And I don't know the answer to that, but if it was so obvious one way or the other, then we'd already be doing it.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, you know, I'll tell you, I put iOS 7 on my iPhone. And I've had a lot of people hollering at me over the years because, you know, I came to Microsoft 5-ish years ago with an iPhone, you know, and everyone's like, why didn't you switch? And I was like, well, I like my iPhone. It's perfectly fine, competent phone. I don't need a new phone every 20 minutes. And it works fine. You know, I've invested in the ecosystem and they want to know why I don't switch over. Well, I put iOS 7 on my iPhone and it started heating up because it's a beta.
Right.
And apparently, they're going to scale it up and down. So I have a 4S, which is the i4 processor. It's not the fancy new i4, A4.
A4, yeah, yeah. Not A5.
And so all the 3D and the translucency is apparently working it so hard that it is getting hot. And it kept rebooting. It would even reboot and say, I'm too hot. I need to cool down. And I was going to New York. I needed a break. I needed a phone that would work. So I threw the SIM card into the Lumia. I've got a Lumia 920 that I use for development. You know, and I'm not a Windows phone guy, but I tried it out. So I basically spent a weekend in New York with a Lumia. And when I switched back to my iPhone, the thing that bugged me the most was that the tiles on the iPhone don't update. Like, other than calendar and clock, everything else is just so kind of blah, just kind of sitting there. Like, the weather is always 72 and sunny, you know?
But the question is, why don't the tiles update? Why didn't Apple do that when they redid this UI?
Well, I mean, I assume it's either a legal reason or they would get yelled at for looking like us. But I would like my iPhone where I could make the icons different sizes. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So like, say what you will for the Windows ecosystem, but man, I pinned my hotel. I pinned Subway instructions. I pinned restaurants. I pinned my boarding pass. You know, I pinned deep links to information in a natural way. And then when I left New York, I just deleted all those pins.
Right.
I wonder if people even know how to do that. Like, my wife has a Windows phone. Well,
or people are starting to think like the way you're thinking is really interesting. It's the configuration for this trip is the stuff these things I'm going to need.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I changed the configuration not based on aesthetic or my sense of I want it to look pretty today, but right. I filled up a whole section of it with all the stuff that I needed to move my way around the city.
Yeah.
And I used this transit application called Here Transit. It comes with Nokia
phones.
Oh,
my goodness. You turned me onto that, and I loved it.
It's so good.
It's so good.
And it's just got such a brilliant user interface paradigm that I was moving, I swear, and I know I'm going to sound like a fanboy. I'm more of a fanboy of this one app, so to be clear for the listeners. But Here Transit is so good. I was moving around New York like a native.
Yep.
Now, I've been in New York, a dozen times, and I know my way around the subway system for the most part. But it was giving me alternatives I hadn't even thought about.
And it actually checks data. So we had I was using it in San Francisco during BART, mm-hmm. On the BART, and BART had a station breakdown, and it was on Here Transit and said, don't go to that station, right. Go to this station instead.
So I showed it to you as we met up on the train. So you used it over the week.
I use it for the rest of the week. You showed it to me on the train going to the show. Mm-hmm. The rest of the week, as I was staying in Berkeley, so I took the train every day in.
Yeah.
I would fire it up, even though I knew where I was going.
Yeah.
And it would. And one day, it came up and said, there was a red bar. The way this thing presents itself, as soon as you start, it says, if you want to leave right now, and then it sort of steps down. Rather than ask you, when do you want to leave, it does the right thing. It just, here's your data. Now, when do you, now you can figure out when to go. And on the one that was right now, there was a red bar in it. And when I clicked on the red bar, it showed the station shut down because of a police incident.
Mm.
15-minute delay. And then you want alternates, show the alternates. Get off at this station, take this other train, you'll avoid it.
That's fantastic.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. It's a crime that it's not in every, I see why Nokia did it, but it's a crime it's not in every phone. It's that good of an app. If I lived in New York, that might be enough reason for me to switch. Because I downloaded
all the time.
I downloaded three different MTA, New York style subway apps, and they were garbage on the iPhone.
Interesting.
I could not find a decent app. I mean, I know that there are apps, but and I realize that after a while you just figure out, which trains go uptown and et cetera. But
yeah.
Man, this was great. And did you do the pinning? Did you pin different locations and then it will tell you how to get there?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
Including even the walking directions. So once, as I come out of the station, take this exit on the station, then walk down, then go this way to get to the stop you want to get to. But, you're hitting on a really, I think, key point, and it relates to the live tiles too, which is, I get that these companies are competing and they want our business, and so they're denying others their features.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you got to look at the live tile. It's just a good idea.
Right.
Why wouldn't everybody do that?
It's just a good idea, right? Like,
yeah.
Like right now, if I want to look at what my next appointment is on my iPhone, I either launch my calendar app and go to today and scroll around, or I have to lock the phone and then look at the lock screen, or I pull down the notification thing, but the notification center only shows the next 6 hours of appointments. So, there's all these limitations and all of these problems would be solved by just putting my next appointment right there.
Right.
Yeah.
On where it's supposed to be.
And,
when I feel the same way about this Here Transit app, it's like, I would pay for this app. This app is astonishing.
Yeah, it is.
So sell it to me on everything. Why wouldn't you?
They want you to buy Nokia phones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The fragmentation of all the phones look the same. Right.
Yep.
I mean, I saw a bright blue Windows phone and I said, oh, what's that? And it was an HTC. I just assumed it was a Nokia, right?
Right.
And then I saw a kind of a bright, bright white phone, and it was like a what was it? It was a Samsung Galaxy Note. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just slabs. They're slabs with screens.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think we're moving towards a some kind of a of a convergence, right? With Google, things like Google Now, trying to give you that idea of, we know where you are, we know where you're headed, here's kind of the information you need right now in your life.
Yes.
Everybody's trying to do that. You know, live tiles are kind of random. They sit there and they kind of spin a little bit, tell you your next appointment. The iOS notification center kind of works. Google Now is extremely location and time focused, but they're all trying to give us the same idea, which is, why did I pull my phone out of my pocket just now? And that's, I think, the next great user interface problem to solve. Scott is in San Francisco on the street. He doesn't live in San Francisco. It's 9 a.m. We know he had a flight. He's picked his phone up. He is either looking for food or a taxi. You know what I mean? Like that.
Yeah.
That kind of anticipation.
I would also think that an agent model could easily, as you're getting ready for a trip, know, hey, he likes to have his boarding pass pinned, his subway directions pinned, his hotel information pinned. So let's just generate those.
Right. Bop, 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 right, right.
Here
and
they are.
We're getting there. We're getting there. Yeah. The beginnings are happening. The iPhone has the, you know, rarely used passbook feature, which is where you add your boarding passes and your coupons and stuff.
Yeah.
The, if I understand correctly, I may get these reversed, but when you pin your United boarding pass for that airline, it will mm-hmm. pop up on your lock screen and allow you to see your boarding pass even without unlocking your phone based on time, while the Alaska Air boarding pass will do geofencing. So it notices that you're near the airport and then will pop itself up.
Interesting.
That's the beginning of an agent style anticipatory.
The real
interface.
Agent is actually assisting you all of the time.
Yeah.
And has time to think to actually anticipate all
yep.
of that stuff.
Yep. I think you've given me a blog post here. I'm going to go right.
But we are definitely, you know, the balancing act here. There was an app that came out briefly for the iPhone that was, it started out just trying to figure out where to get you the best price for gas. So you turn it on, it would monitor your GPS data, and fairly quickly figured out where you lived, where you worked, and what gas stations you normally went to, mm-hmm. and then started making recommendations. Says you should be about out of gas now. The gas station over here has the best price.
Gas
and
buddy.
It fell into that uncanny valley.
Yep. It's awesome. It's Gas Buddy. I love that app.
You're heading towards this sort of creepiness factor that once your machine starts anticipating more about you than you realize.
Exactly.
Right? That because it knows where you are and it figures out all these things about you, then it starts making suggestions where you get this sort of chill of, my phone knows too much about me.
Well, and then that's where things like Google Now blur that line. And it's like, well, does my phone know a lot about me? Or does Google know a lot about me? I don't
right.
really trust Google. Or yeah. Siri, like, wow, Siri, that was effectively creepy, you know?
Yes.
It's like when you meet this friend and they're like, they ask you how your kids are by name and they're not really your friend.
Yep.
It's like, whoa, you know, I don't know you like that, Siri.
Yeah, we don't have that relationship yet.
Yes, exactly. We're still working there. I think it's important for UX designers to think about those kind of things.
That agent design has to learn slowly.
Yeah.
And maybe even communicate, even though I already know the answer to this, I'm going to communicate you this question so that you feel like you gave me permission to know something.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Actually, there's an interesting feature I just got called out in iOS 7. Siri now, if it thinks it's pronouncing something wrong, will ask you how to pronounce it and kind of give you that idea of, you know, there's some information I don't really have, but I want to make your experience better. So how do I pronounce this? And you can actually say to Siri, no, that's not how you pronounce this. And she'll apologize and then remember how to do it next. I think that they could.
You know, that's no different than we, you know, if somebody told me something about you that was relatively private, mm-hmm. I would never come at you and say, hey, I know about this. I would rather ask you. And if you chose to tell me, now it's out in the open, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, maintain people's privacy. I think agents maintaining a sense of privacy is important.
You know, that's a great point. Google now has decided that the bagel shop that I eat at is work. Okay, this is true. So I go to Google now and it's like 20 minutes to work. And I'm like, work? Oh,
work?
Really? Wow. Okay. And that, of course, that didn't make me feel good. Because like, well,
the alternative was at the airport,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's either, yeah. It's like, well, I eat at the bagel shop way too much if Google Now has decided. So it just kind of changed my relationship with Google Now. I think I would have preferred that they ask, hey, you know, you're going by here a lot. What if some poor schmuck, his mistress's house is like, Google Now has decided that it's work? You know, that's not okay.
Yeah, isn't the correct question here, hey, this location seems important to you. How would you categorize
it
and give you a list?
There you go.
Right? Maybe sort the list of the first three things of the things you think it's most likely to be.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Cool. It was always so fun to talk to you, Richard.
We're on to something here, man. I'm excited about this. Yeah. We can make agents right.
Let's do it. We'll quit our jobs right now, and we'll go and we'll think about this.
We'll make a project out of it.
Very cool. Well, this has been another episode of Hansel Minutia with Scott and Richard. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.